everyone. Happy to have you here for another episode of Legacy Matters. Our show is growing, and the lives and legacies of the people around us have taken on a new importance as we take stock of what is most precious to us. As always, our show will focus on building and preserving your legacy, the importance of community, and the telling of stories we find amusing. Thanks for joining us. Now, enjoy the show.
We're going.
It's okay. Done. Oh, done. Hi, guys.
Sorry. Hi, that's all right.
I'm in.
It's all right. Hi, how are you two?
Pretty good.
Good to see you. Feels welcome. Like it's been forever.
If you don't know, you're listening to the Legacy Matters podcast, which we're talking a little bit of new name and not we're going to leave Legacy Matters in it. Well, we won't do it because it's controversial.
Right.
We won't talk about it because it's controversial.
Right? No, only among us three, maybe. Like, it's not like...
I mean, there's people out there who live or die.
They're doing
this.
A 2020 right. story on us.
How will they be
they're
able to
changing
Google
the
it?
Name.
Name change. No.
No.
Maybe. It might happen.
If that happens, I call not it.
Your problem.
Anyway, Legacy Matters. Thanks for joining us. Blah, blah, blah. We are
Thank you to the Comedy Corner Underground in the Seven Corners Corner Bar.
That's correct.
It's awesome. Our gracious hosts, as always.
Yeah.
They even know we're here. So it works out well.
Yep. More and more, they've let us in now.
Yeah.
More and more people, I'm finding that people are finding this place really interesting.
Yeah.
Like they just don't know it exists and they come down the stairs and they're like, holy crap, there's a comedy club in the basement of that place. Yeah.
A good comedy club.
I'm getting some nods from our guests.
Yeah.
So that's good. We're going to, we got your commercial recorded and now it's playing our
did you?
Nail Ninja's
awesome.
Commercial
good.
Is finally out there. So thank you, Nail Ninja, for Andrea Storley for supporting our cause here. And if you are listening to this, you can support them by checking out their two locations. One I'm going to say.
Northeast,
yeah, that's for sure.
St. Louis Park.
St. Louis Park is the other one. Thanks.
Yeah.
And see, this is why we're the best at this, because our ads are
one of us might remember.
Right. You can find them at nailninjampls.com.
That's it.
I did not know that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And several people have told me now that they've bought.
Several?
Several.
We're up to several.
Well, I mean, I'd say at least six. So I think the ads are working out.
Well, good.
Yeah.
That's at least 3/4 to almost all the listenership. So that's pretty good.
Don't expect more. Because that's everyone.
Yeah, so your dad didn't go to Nail Ninja.
Right.
All right. 6 out of 7.
There's just a few out there. Yeah,
hey,
no
one
hasn't gone yet. Hi, Ron. We know he listens.
Right.
We've got
now he's thinking about a manicure.
Yep. 98% conversion rate from listener to purchaser of products on our show.
Sell it.
Yep, that's great.
Well,
no, I do appreciate those who care to check out the people who support us because it is important to us and it's great for them. So there you go. NailNinjaMPLS.com. Go check them out. It's great. What else we got? Anything?
We have a guest.
We have a guest.
Same time.
You know, and he, more so than almost any other person who has come through that door, has honored the "we don't want to get to know you before we get to know you" clause, right?
Yep. Like not in a mean
nailed
way.
It.
Has hardly said a word to us.
Yeah,
which is great.
Mike Lotzer. Well, great in what sense?
Did you say it right,
Lotzer?
Yeah. Oh, he did say it right. Good. I'm just checking.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know.
I'm gonna make you get right in there.
Yeah. Get it.
Yeah.
Give it to him.
I like it.
Nice.
So, hi,
Mike. Welcome.
Hey. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
How did you find this?
Yeah. My friend Glenn, who interviewed me on his podcast a while back for Sauna Times, Sauna Talk, connected us and he reached out and
slightly
said, sure.
Different setting.
It's not 190 degrees here.
Yeah, not yet.
It's pretty cold in here, actually.
Yeah, coolish.
For a really nice day.
For a basement.
Yep. Usually the opposite of 190 degrees.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
So, let's just get started. So you're yet another Glenn Auerbach. Auerbach, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're good at that.
Yeah.
Wow, that would have been bad.
There's a Graffelman, too. There's a Glenn Graffelman, I know. I just about said
that. Did we interview him? I don't remember that.
No.
Okay, fair enough.
But he sent you, I know what happened.
makes one of us.
I sent out an email saying to past guests saying, yeah. "Hey, listen, the show is going well.
Yeah.
We'd like to interview people. Maybe you know that we don't have access to, or you know, don't know of." And you were one of the names that he suggested. So why do you suppose he did that?
You know, I've got a unique story. He likes sauna. I like sauna. Maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So either he likes you or he doesn't like you. We'll find out. Yeah.
Well, you should go do this.
You'll have a good time.
In that brief introduction to Glenn, I don't think that he would send you here. I don't think he's got a mean bone in his body.
No.
That's kind of where I was headed.
He's
good.
No.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not going to like be giving you a hard time by sending you to something that is not cool.
Right.
Like he sent you here because
not a gotcha
he likes
moment.
Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a mutual thing.
Yes, it is. It's mutual.
I think that's the case.
Yeah. Well, we're going to sauna days together in May. So, you know,
where is that?
Hopefully it turns out. Duluth. Yeah.
Duluth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Sauna days. What?
Can you elaborate on that? I know. I need to know more about that.
Towels.
I haven't been there, but it's like a big festival for people who love the sauna and food trucks and alcohol and heat and cold plunge. And
I suppose.
Yeah, I'm going to bring one of our trailers from Healing Heroes up. And
I caught it.
Healing Heroes.
I mean, you got to jump on that.
Yep. Oh, well, I think so. I mean,
it's very important.
Well, and I think we should. Should we do that? Should we do that before we get to know where you grew up and stuff? Or should we?
Yeah, I think follow. I want to know now.
Okay.
So you've got a trailer.
You said it. We'll go.
So Healing Heroes is a nonprofit that just started a few years ago.
Yeah.
Josh Meisberger, the co-founder, and I started it out of Josh's love for sauna, both Army veterans, combat veterans. And we have found kind of the therapeutic healing benefits of wood fire sauna and cold plunge.
Okay.
And Josh owns his own construction company, Rare Homes. And so we started to build these mobile saunas out of horse trailers. We'd convert horse trailers.
Yeah, yeah. Like specifically like an old horse trailer?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, we've kind of got to look at a certain age range. So I had to learn how to weld to, you know, they're not pretty when you buy them, you know?
Yeah, no,
I'd
say they're older.
They're older with the bullet nose and kind of a classic car body.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then, we drop these trailers off at disabled veterans' homes struggling with PTSD, amputees. I just dropped one off in Big Lake today. And then they keep them for 2 to 3 weeks and they work with the VA to see if that's a benefit for their mental health and so we can coordinate them. So just trying to help guys who maybe are isolating or struggling with suicidal ideation or just miss the benefits of cardio, but you know, they can't run anymore. Their back's bad from jumping out of planes. That high heat, these get up to 230 if you want it.
So I suppose they're really enclosed because they're not real big.
No, you could fit 6 people in, and if you like each other, you can do that. But
even if you don't, get 6 in there. Sounds good. You'll like each other by the end.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Glenn has an ice house conversion that you can fit a lot more that he's allowing us to use for the veteran events.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So that's Healing Heroes. Just kind of got started. Falls underneath the 501c3 of the church that I pastor at now, kind of as an incubator, but Wounded Warriors worked with us for events and different things. So eventually it's going to be its own thing. But I run a church. Josh runs a construction business. So it's kind of our little side hobby.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to have something on the side.
Yeah.
Side hobby that happens to provide a bunch of benefit.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people's side hobby is.
I don't even want to talk about my side hobby.
Pounding cases of cores every weekend and fishing or something, you know?
Sure.
Like, not that
working
that's bad.
Yeah, not that is wrong, but
it's if different. That's you do it, you know, I'm okay. Yeah. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying.
Right.
You nonchalantly just said that you learned to weld so you could make horse trailers so that you could bring
turn horse trailers into saunas for veterans.
Who need
help.
As if that's hobby-esque.
It's fun, you know, and I do think anybody who's made a lot of money or promoted in their organization or whatever, and then also tasted kind of the benefit of meaning, where they really feel like they're helping people and making a difference in people who are really suffering. I've yet to meet somebody who have experienced all those things and really kind of at the meaning one.
Right.
Once you get a taste of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people run on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think people like get some actual benefit out of being good to one another and like helping their community?
I think so.
Yeah,
like, and I think it's a thing. It feels good and it's rewarding.
Yeah, I think we're wired up for responsibility and to help people and to make a difference.
So
and
good
all that.
Feelings so. Promote more good feelings. Huh.
Right. Yeah, it's weird.
Well, and before we get too far away from it, Mike, thank you for your service.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that as well. I have some questions about that. Yeah, I mean, I hope that wasn't overly sarcastic. Like, Grandma, I was kidding. I understand 100%.
No, no,
it makes good at helping people.
No, but it
makes you feel good.
It's worth kind of asking with a hyperbolic tone or whatever, because a lot of people, I think in the younger generation, my kids' age and some of their friends, I do think there's this message. I was asking some of my kids' friends what they wanted to do for a career, and like two out of three of them were like, obviously, we want to be influencers. And we want to have, we like TikTok channel and And it's like, why do you want that? And it's like, well, so, you know, we can have this. And this girl was like, you know, the new Stanley water bottle and I want to have that. And so this idea, like, I think a lot of young
people. How old are these kids?
Sixth, seventh grade, you know?
Okay.
So I think a lot of young kids are getting the message, like, to be a celebrity and to be a consumer, have money to buy stuff is like where it's at. But I don't know that that's where it's at. That has never been my.
I don't think so.
That's never scratched my itch. Yeah.
Right.
No. I feel like there's a lot missing from that. Like, like, I don't know, any gratification whatsoever.
I think it's fair to say that it's not obviously where it's at. And it won't be the way they're thinking years down the road.
No.
That's, you know, in most cases.
Sure. You know,
yeah.
I think people figure it out, but some people don't. I've got friends who just continue to climb the ladder in whatever industry they're in, and they keep getting the bigger house and the better truck or whatever, and they're not very happy. And it's
ladder
like
climbers,
you just have to like find a place you can make an impact, man. I think that's what you're missing.
I mean,
get something back out of it.
Not to put more importance on the reason behind why we do this show than need be, but that's what this is about, is getting to know people like yourself.
Yeah,
like, we really did not know a single thing about what you did.
I actually really like that, because I do get asked to do some of this stuff, and a lot of times there's kind of a, hey, would you promote this new veteran nonprofit, or would would you kind of weigh in on a theological matter or something? It's like, oh, you don't even really have an angle.
What about me?
I think that's really noble, and I think just sharing people's stories is really kind of the equivalent of learning how to weld and building something.
Well, and that's one of the things we always talk about. Right? Yeah, there's not one thing. You're not known for one thing. There's a lot of different things that people do in layers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a bunch of other stuff going on.
Mark sort of, I would say maybe inadvertently kind of threw out into the universe a challenge of sorts as well recently, which is like, when are we going to have a bad guest?
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Oh. And we do this. Say that.
It's funny to me, because I really, truly, firmly believe that everybody – it's not about storytelling. There are people who can tell stories.
Yeah.
Sure.
But everybody's life is important. Everybody's life matters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the modern culture of those zipping through the Facebook or whatever, you know, the socials, TikTok – I'm not saying that that's going to go away. I'm not saying it's the most terrible thing. I don't like it.
No.
But at the same time – like, this is the antidote to that in a certain way to
all
me.
That's
is
a
to
snapshot.
Sit down and actually look someone in the eye and talk to them for a little while and get to know them.
Yeah, the long form communication. And I also think it's unique that you guys have three hosts, and that's really helpful in a lot of ways, I suspect, not having listened to your show.
I think so.
There's a C.S. Lewis quote, and I would paraphrase, I can't remember it, but he says something, because he was friends with Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And when one of their friends, mutual friends, died in their circle, I think they were called the Inklings, they would get together and share stories.
Yes.
He said, when whatever this guy's name died, I experienced J.R.R. Tolkien in a different way, because when he wasn't in that circle anymore, the man became different, you know, and he talked about how friendship is kind of like looking at diamonds from like a different angle.
Right.
So I think when you have three hosts, you're kind of bringing different high resolution to whoever you're talking to, probably.
God, I completely agree.
Yeah.
No, I really, I really do. You know, and the thing that.
That was eloquently worded. Yeah. Thank you.
Like,
I'm taking that as a compliment for the team.
Exactly.
It's like he speaks in front of people or something.
Yeah.
No, I mean, in these two, I will say, you know, finding two people who share a genuine curiosity for the people out in the world, like, who can really truly sit down and genuinely get to know someone and not have it be about them is just
awesome. When you're not looking at the sheet, like, oh wait, what question am I supposed to ask? It's like, I don't really care about
you guys. You wouldn't be doing this as long as you have been, and you wouldn't be sitting here coming and hanging out for 2 hours if you didn't truly enjoy it.
This is exactly what it's about. Finding out what's going on, because everyone does have a unique story and all these things. You're like, I did not know that about you. I wouldn't have guessed it.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
Well, cheers to you guys for doing that.
Oh, look at I feel now if the Minnesotan is kicking in, like, don't you dare compliment us.
Shucks.
So I always quickly moved another different topic.
Yeah. I do. I always try when we're
can't handle
people,
praise. I know.
I always try and listen and hear. It's like if there's an accent or anything, like, okay, sir, are you a Minnesotan? But just there kind of led into, okay, I'm thinking you might be from Minnesota originally. Yeah.
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 I could kind of feel that. I did live other places, and it was a culture shock moving back, where it's like, wow, everybody's really nice here. I forgot what that's like.
Yeah. Like, oh my God. We are nice. We're nice. We're a little tough to get to know, maybe a little bit.
Yeah,
or something.
That's true.
Yeah. Yep. Breaking into the circle.
I've heard that if people are like from the South and they marry in Minnesota. But persistence tends to pay off. Yeah.
It does. It does. And I don't know too many.
Once you realize you're not going anywhere, we're like, all right, you can hang out.
Fine, you're saying, all right, what's your name?
How many winters have you lasted?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Like, how many tours?
Why on earth did you move here?
What was her name?
So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Lakeville, Minnesota.
Okay.
And my dad was a Richfield cop, and he did undercover work and narcotics, and was a sergeant on nights. And so I'd do ride-alongs growing up with him. My mom was a flight attendant, and they were kind of that old school parent where you didn't feel like you always had to have your kid around. So they would put me on a plane age 9 to 19 and ship me off to where my mom grew up in Missoula, Montana. My grandpa had a ranch, if you've seen Yellowstone.
Love
it. Pretty close to actually
where we go.
Very similar. My grandpa's kind of like Kevin Costner in that film a little bit.
That's cool.
In the 90s now. Awesome. Right? Yeah. So I had that split experience of growing up in a small town, Plains, Montana, in the summers working the ranch, and then in a suburban environment here. But my dad was really concerned my sisters and I would grow up to be yuppies, he said.
God forbid.
This is before you could. I don't know if you can do this still as a cop, but you just put a bulletproof vest on your kid and bring him on ride-alongs.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't tell you how much I love that.
There might be a form to fill out now.
I mean, I'm sure you probably can't do that. But, isn't that,
kind of
sad that we can't?
Kind of. And I learned a lot, and it really did kind of expand my world as a kid and a teenager to, wow, not everyone lives at the economic level we do. And has a lot of people like sleep on the floor without a mattress, or on the floor with a mattress, or they wonder if there'll be enough food and or if they'll get shot and stuff like that. So I had
good stuff that contributes to it's not that our society is bad. I love America as much as the next person, but like the fact that we haven't solved for that better than we have is a really sad testament to kind of what we are, because
all the problems come with the economic disparity, and that's like, okay, you just don't have access to food. That's not okay.
No, it's just not.
Poverty is traumatic.
Yeah,
and it's many forms.
Such a hard way of living, and it's so not decent. Like I've lived in Europe, right, and just generally speaking, in much of the rest of the world, I would say there's probably places that are far worse. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But
you just haven't visited them.
So. I've been to some pretty rough joints, but even in the roughest of them, sort of the, if there's just no resources, there's no resources and everybody's kind of in the same boat generally.
Yeah.
But in a country with this many resources, that's where I look at it and say, you know, politics aside, like, we should be better than this. Whatever the way we do it, it doesn't matter. Right. We should be better.
Yeah, agreed.
With the resources we have.
We are the most affluent society that's ever lived in human history, right?
Yeah, and you would think we could represent that better
somehow
in the way that we, you know, distribute some of that. I don't know how, you know, there's lots of flaws in all the different ways things work.
Yeah.
And people are going to be up in arms if you try and do this way or that way. Mm-hmm. But just generally, yes, it would be nice to see every kid. I just always go toward the kids because I worked with the kids. But like every single kid should be sleeping, if possible, in a bed, knowing that they got food. going and learning and getting good nutrition and all that.
Like, well, this all last the rest year out of there. In Minnesota, how they're finally like, you know, school lunches should be available for all kids. It's like, really? It took us long?
Yeah, that probably should have been like a breakfast. For breakfast.
It's like, wow, it took to, you know that what just
I,
happened.
You know what I want to see them do is stop stop letting Quick Trip or whoever makes their food make their food for the kids too, because it's just not the best quality.
Great,
yeah, and good for them that they give them some food. I'm just fine with that. But man, it should be higher quality. Yeah,
exactly. Dude,
these kids need to eat well. Right. You know. Right.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, it's just crazy it took this long to just, oh, we should feed them, and they shouldn't have to pay for it.
No.
No, maybe we feed them something halfway decent.
But maybe I think part of the problem, and my dad was onto this, as a cop who lived a decent life in the suburbs economically, but then was, you know, all night in Richfield, Minneapolis and stuff, and working with drug dealers, and he had this undercover convertible, and he would buy like kilos of coke and come home. He looked like Miami Vice. And, you know, I think it really like was forced upon him with his work that some people are really just stuck in the mindset of like, it'll never get better than this. This is what I was born into. And then there's people in the suburbs who may have never come from anywhere else who are just like, I assume everyone else has this stuff, right?
Yeah. You know? I think there's an assumption out there.
So, I think even just driving from my nice house in Lakeville to this part of downtown, my wife works downtown, so she's more acclimated. It's just a reminder, like, you know, it's not that far. It was 25 minutes, but it looks really
different. It's an unintentional disconnect because it is so different. Yeah, like, you don't think about it.
My catalytic converter might not be in my truck.
It's true.
No, I've lost two in the last couple of years. So, it might not be there. Yeah. You're right.
Well, it's got a good clearance. It can get right on.
Yes, it's fine. It takes about 30 seconds and they're gone. Yeah. So, well, I don't know if I've depressed myself or what.
No.
Not yet.
It's not.
It's early.
It's not good. Overly depressing. It's just that when you grow up and the teachers are telling you that every little kid in the class can be whatever they want, and and you're looking out at the world and you see like the some of the really crappy old school traditions of America, like not letting homosexuals be homosexual or. You know, women, which everything's not, it's not all fixed. I know that. But seeing a lot of those things get better, but then realizing that everything's not quite better.
Yeah, there's still a long way to go.
Really, really bad to begin with. And sure, it's an improvement, but it's like,
Yeah.
One thing that's helped me a lot as a pastor and a former Army chaplain and working in the nonprofit world, my wife works in nonprofits. And I noticed that I can get really quickly overwhelmed by the scale of the suffering. At one point I had a 1300 person battalion that was all infantry in combat, you know, one chaplain to 1300 people.
That's just, boy.
And so I had someone say, Mike, do for one what you wish you could do for everybody. Yeah. And I thought that was a really helpful principle to live by, because I think a lot of us, and I've been there, where you just kind of shrug your shoulders and you're like, this is really overwhelming.
Yeah.
I'm just going to binge Netflix for a little bit. Or I'm going to check out.
Yeah,
we can't build a fleet of 10 horse trailers within a year, which would be a reasonable help. Like, I guess it's not worth building one.
Right.
It's like, you got to build one before you build 10. Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you have to put, you know, wake up and put one foot in front of the other a little bit.
Well, like, how many podcasts have you done? And I'm sure, like, when you started, it was somewhat overwhelming, or you felt like, wow.
Well, I mean, I originally
tried too much, so that makes it easier.
I had two different co-hosts early on, and the pandemic wiped that out, and I couldn't be happier with the way this is. And this has been going on long enough that I, like,
you can talk about your other relationship.
Yeah, previous one. Yeah, but I mean this is the show, and it has been the show for a long time. And you're right, this is one of those things that if you looked at the abysmal numbers of like how much we make or something out of it, you could say I could quit this, but no, we won't, because it is something. But and there's a lot more stuff out there. But so these horse trailers, how long does it take you to convert one into this sauna apparatus?
Maybe like 8 days of work between two people. But you know, we're not focusing on that. We have jobs and other things. So we're just in the process of purchasing our third trailer. We've built some fixed ones. I'm converting a 12x10 shed right now in a backyard. Okay. So, you know, the goal is to expose veterans to this, but also bring some permanent solutions to really qualified wounded warriors over time. You know, the funding is certainly there. There's a lot of people who would love to. In fact, I think all of the grants that we've gotten and the checks, I don't think we've asked for it really. It's just people are like, could we give you money? And so
people are like, this is important, which is a good feeling.
You're it's very specific. I think people want to help veterans, and there's a lot of veteran nonprofits that are like, we just kind of help with the suicide thing. And it's like, how do you do that? And they're like, we have a really nice website and we just kind of, we've got good energy and we do a lot. It's like, all right. It's like, well, we bring this specific. Yeah.
We have actionable items that we.
You can ask us how many, you know, veterans have we served with the sauna in their, you know, it's just really hard to wiggle out of like the impact. It's either you're not doing it or you're doing it.
Right. You know? But have the mobile one so you can go there, make sure, because I mean, I would guess the majority of people would be beneficial for it, but some people are like, I don't know if it's something for me to continue, but you can get more people that way and get more people included into it, which is a big deal.
Totally.
Yeah. It's a bridge for a lot of veterans who are isolated. So we, I think we're in our 10th year as a church where my wife and I help facilitate a marriage retreat for active service members and veterans couples in Rochester at Ironwood Springs Christian Camp, but it's all paid for by Wounded Warrior and Yellow Ribbon and all that. But we brought the sauna trailers this year, and
I bet that was a big hit.
Yeah, and granted, half of, I think there's 25 couples, but half of the couples were deploying to an Iraq deployment with the 34th Infantry here. But it was interesting because you don't, these aren't super spacious, and you know, I joked, you know, if you like each other, six people is possible. But we had, I think we went through like a whole cord of firewood because couples were just lining three couples at a time in there and they just wanted that connection to kind of support each other. They didn't know each other before. But now they do know each other. There's like a little system that's built of support.
Well, and expanding their, I mean, having a support network is vitally important.
Well, everything about jumping into a sauna like that with a small group of people leads you, forces you to figure out how to have a conversation.
When you're like, you know, a foot apart, you're like, well, we're talking.
We're going in strangers and we're coming out friends.
Yep. But there's firelight, you know, you can see the stove and it's pretty dark in there except for the firelight. So it's not, you know, not too uncomfortable.
Right. Oh, yeah. That sounds lovely.
Well, but it's also like it's, I mean, I would say that that is sort of deeply ingrained in us as humans.
Oh, totally.
To be into that.
There's something very primal about that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, so you're on here. I didn't know all of this stuff. And we had, you know, one of our recent guests, a good friend of mine, lost his son to suicide.
Yes.
Also a veteran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got my younger brother. I'm not going to talk for him in any way. I don't want him to be upset with me for anything. But he and his friends from the military after their deployment to Iraq, I got to spend, I would say it was probably 6 months after they got back or so, and I got to spend a weekend with them ice fishing. And I saw a group of men broken.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to start crying about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they were really wrestling with a lot of stuff. I don't know exactly, you know, but.
And you won't.
No, I won't. Yeah, and I don't judge them for it.
But you can also recognize, pain when you see it and how widespread it was among such a small group.
Yeah. Just the manifestation of that pain and kind of how they, you know, for better or worse, they were each other's support network, but each of them was kind of in their own way.
Yeah.
You know, wrestling or not broken permanently, but, you know, broken in the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of things out there to try and help those guys, but at the same time, I mean, you can't get away from the statistics. They're dying at a much faster rate, dying of suicide at a much faster rate, and other things for that matter.
Yeah. Deaths of despair, they call them at the VA. But
at a much higher rate than the rest of the general population. And yeah, I mean, something does need to be done, and it does need to be tangible. Like, are there good statistics on the benefits, like the health benefits of that? Is that some part of what you're trying to do?
Yeah, the VA has done some research recently. If you ever have Disney Plus and watch Chris Hemsworth, who did the Thor and the Marvel movies, he and Peter Attia, he's a doctor. Oncologist, I think, and maybe that's not right, but he's a doctor that specializes in longevity, among other things. And they did a show together on Disney Plus called Limitless. One of the episodes was on the actual benefits. So if you wanted, if you don't want to read a bunch of academic papers and you just want to, like, what in the world is this really good for you better than it is? And there's a ton of research that dementia goes down by a huge percentage if you do this like three times a week. Mm-hmm. Heat exposure and cold therapy will bring down your risk of cardiovascular stroke, all sorts of anti-aging benefits, depression, things like that. So it is there, and you could watch that episode on Limitless or read it. But like you said, it's not just the benefits of sauna, because I don't think there's a silver bullet. I think people, just like you said, people are multifaceted and there's not just one identity. We have lots of experiences. So, but it's a bridge that kind of builds a bridge of trust that can bear the weight of relationship and reaching out. And so, you know, we will get guys calling us, hey, you know, I use a sauna. I just talked to one today. Who he had a sauna drop off probably 6 months ago, but called me and just said, you know, he might have an at-home caregiver now through the VA because he's having a hard time putting his socks on and just processing that. And I could just tell this guy, you know, that the conversation went from that to a rocket attack he was in where some kids died in a school because the school was right next to the combat zone and then surgeons fired into the school, and how he's having a hard time looking at his own son in the morning because it reminds him of one of the kids that died in there. And, you know, I don't think we have, it's not like we deployed together. He was in Afghanistan, I was in Iraq, but, that was just built because somebody gave us his contact. We dropped a sauna off. I vaguely remember where he lives and dropping that off.
Right.
And he found that beneficial, but then he felt like he could reach out.
Yeah, he felt comfortable. Like, hey, this is it. It's, you said a good word was a bridge, but there's like a little connection there. Like, okay, I feel like, okay, there's somebody I can talk to, I can reach out to. That obviously there was some benefit with that as well, just with the sun, and that connection is important.
And I've been a part of like ice fishing ministry or to veterans or outreach programs. You know, I take 30 veterans spearfishing up at Lake Winnie, I think for the third or fourth year in a row with Wounded Warrior. We do that in December. So, you know, I don't think there's one way per se.
There's never one way.
Even though we do those events or the marriage retreats, there's like cribbage tournaments, and you know, some guys drink at the bar, some guys do the pool tournament. We give out crazy prizes, and it's just about forming those relationships. A lot of combat veterans really just don't find it as appealing or practical to form really close relationships because it's very difficult to get close to people and then have them kind of taken from you.
The rest of us, they're taken from us at kind of a normal clip.
Right.
You know, which
is like a hospice, and it's slow.
I mean, so you lose a friend every, you know, or an aunt or an uncle. It starts with your grandparents and your aunts and uncles and a friend every now and again or something. But it's at a slow pace. Yeah,
it's a much different scenario.
I'm not no psychologist. I'll tell you that. Yeah. But I can imagine you know, in most cases, we, the general public, we know when we're going to lose someone. You kind of see it coming for a while, and you're processing it ahead of time.
Yep. Yeah.
Whereas the military guys, whether it's in combat or from suicide after, like, it would be hard to get to know people if you're going to lose people who are as young as you are, as healthy as you are, and then they're just gone.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's just a whole different deal.
One thing that is helpful to know that a lot of people don't know, even in the military, don't know, the suicide rate, we hear this number 22 a day, and it's risen. Right. Even some people think it's in the 30s since COVID for service members. That doesn't necessarily give a perfect picture, because what we're finding is the actual attempt of suicide for service members versus people who have not served in the uniform is not that far apart. It's slightly higher than the general civilian population. It's just that military members have been trained to shoot weapons. Right. They 99.9% of the time will use a firearm, and they will succeed. There's no, like, for the most part, false, like, oh, there was an attempt. It just happens.
So, it just happens.
So I think that actually, I like to share that, because not that that's an encouragement, but I guess it just reminds people it's not completely impossible to bring those numbers down. It's bringing people out of isolation into relationships, looking at their lives holistically. If you're placed in a sphere of influence where you have a veteran or a service member in your life, checking in, things like that, and really being part of a multifaceted community that helps them not get to a point where they make that attempt.
Yeah. Right, you know? Right. They feel so isolated, and that's it. They're like, this is my only choice.
That actually does I mean, it's not like it fixes anything.
No, but it's like,
but it does. It is a nice thing to know.
Yeah.
Because the thoughts that get you to the point where you might consider killing yourself basically are equal amongst the populations is what you're saying, and but the military guys are going to be more effective. Military men and women, I should say, are going to be more effective because of who they are, maybe.
Well, so they literally march you to the chow hall in basic training, said shoot to kill, shoot him in the head, kill him, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's never like miss, right. You know, or like, think about it, you know.
I'm not going to fail at this. I'm going to do this very well because I am who I am. Yeah. That doesn't fix it, but it does make sense. Yeah. And the encouraging part of that, in a certain way, I would say, is that it doesn't make them completely different.
No.
It doesn't make them completely othered, you know.
That's a good way to say it. And part of the reason I think I try to clarify that, because sometimes when those numbers are said, it's just like, man, these guys are probably all just teetering on the edge of
like every one of them.
Right. Like I'll say one thing wrong and you know, it's like,
do this and you're broken.
They're almost statistically negligible, you know, and indistinguishable from the civilian attempt to population.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. So, I think that's important to hear. I mean,
agreed.
Yeah.
We'll take our break here for the middle, but it kind of means, and you can't fix it by reaching out. Like, you can and you can't. It's really nice to say, reach out to your veteran friends, reach out to, you know, but it doesn't always work that way. And to say it on this is one thing.
Right.
Right.
But the truth is, you have to make real connections and be there in reality, whomever that is.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. So anyway.
Cool.
Oh,
all right. We'll be right back.
All right. We'll be back.
Save the world. It could be up to you. Wait a second, wait a minute, and we're through.
Kinetic Legacy is the company that powers the Joe Contractor app. Their unique platform blends the good parts of social tech with their one-of-a-kind data organizing system, giving communities large and small a safe, private space to stay connected and to keep information and memories organized. If you and your community have a shared purpose or passion and are looking for a better way to stay connected, contact Kinetic Legacy today at kineticlegacy.us. Find out how groups from contractors to campers, tribal communities, unions, and alumni organizations are finding their way to meaningful new spaces in this increasingly digital world. Again, that's kineticlegacy.us.
If you're a fan of the show, you know that I love the outdoors. Several years ago, I stopped by a small, independent, and very much American-made little shop in Clarissa, Minnesota, called Battle Lake Outdoors. They sell the best quality canoeing packs, hunting packs, firefighting packs, and much more. Check them out at battlelakeoutdoors.com and use the coupon code LegacyMatters for a 5% discount on your order. Again, that's battlelakeoutdoors.com.
Hey, this is Kate. Visit a Nail Ninja salon and you will find yourself in a salon experience like something you've only imagined could exist, or that you thought only existed in places far cooler than Minnesota. Nail Ninja feels like the unholy union of a badass tattoo joint and the International Space Station. The best equipment, exceeding state regulations for sterilization, comes together with the absolute best artists in the industry. No more boring shit. Seriously, this is a different experience and one you don't want to miss out on. Book an appointment today online at nailninjampls.com.
Wonder Woman Construction is a Minneapolis-based, woman-owned residential and commercial construction and electrical company. Lori and her team pride themselves on their commitment to long-term, green, and sustainable building practices, and they apply their deep understanding of building science to each project they take on. They are dedicated to the complete satisfaction of every client. One more thing that you absolutely cannot miss about Wonder Woman Construction is the fact that every employee loves what they do and truly enjoys working with each other. The best projects are those that are done by happy people, and Wonder Woman Construction is full of happy people. Visit WonderWomanConstruction.com to get started on your happiest project ever.
Save the world, it could be up to you. Wait a second, wait a minute.
You're ready. Second half. Ready. Second half. Here we are. So let's see. We left off with Vets, death, destruction.
Lakeville.
Depression.
Richfield Cops.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Sorry.
When people get enlisted or join the Army, sometimes you get to pick. Did you always have a mission to be faith-based in your career?
Yeah.
No, solid. No, that is a good question. So we didn't grow up religious. My dad was kind of a lapsed Catholic, and my mom grew up kind of Baptist a little bit. Like, her mom took her to a Baptist church.
Yeah.
The story goes, I wasn't really sentient. I was like a baby, but they got married. My dad came to my mom and just said, I just want a divorce, nothing personal. I just want to see other women. You know, he's like an undercover cop. And
right.
Kind of was like Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
vibe. And, you know.
God, when was this?
This was, I was born in 1982, so 1983. 84.
Early 80s?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, so Miami Vice is right in fashion.
He had this mustache and everything.
I could just see the dude.
I love it.
Yeah, like nothing personal. I just,
babe,
you know, I'm not into the marriage. And,
yeah.
And then, you know.
But
don't worry. Like, you can have the house and the money and, like, it'll be all good. And she goes, you can take the house and the money and get some, like, Christian counseling, because I promised Jesus and your Catholic church to be married to you. I don't want you anymore now that you don't want me, but you're not going anywhere. And it totally freaked him out, because it's like, what do you say? Like, oh, my gosh. Like, no, I want a divorce. You know?
No, but wait.
And so that put them on some sort of spiritual quest to be like, I think my dad was just like, whoa, this must be potent stuff. Like, what is that?
You're like, holy crap.
Because she should be like devastated and like, just take the money.
No, she spun beautifully.
That ain't happening.
Yeah.
So anyways, my early memories in life were church shopping with my parents.
Yeah.
You know, he's Catholic. She's kind of Baptist. Neither of them, I don't even know if they were like Christians or just kind of nominal. Like, I guess this is what you do. So I guess you compromised. Catholic, Baptist, they became Lutheran. So I grew up in the Lutheran church.
The Lutheran great American compromise.
It really is.
Right. And
good old Lutheran.
Christianity light.
I totally love my dad, but he's a handful. Like, there's just some people that like are larger than life. Like when he.
So he's still alive.
He is.
Do you have both your parents?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And
are they still married?
They are. Unbelievably.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, it worked.
Which is just like a testimony.
If
you
right
really want to stay married, like, it's possible.
It is possible.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, just go, I'm done. No, we're going to work on this. Oh, right. All right.
And now being like a minister and doing premarital counseling and realize just how crazily different they are. Like, it's a total mad respect to them to
absolutely
but anyway, and they're better for it, you know. It's not just dutiful, like, we're just gonna stay together because God wants us to. It was definitely helpful to my sisters and I just fighting for that marriage. But anyways, that really inspired me, because I saw the transformation in this very rough around the edges Irish hard drinking no nonsense cop with a temper.
Sounds like my family,
right?
And like, I love this,
you know,
guy
just like, lots of f-bombs, lots of just like, you know, like like, we didn't, you know, we weren't bad kids because, like, homicide was on the table, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Hey,
right.
There's a level. Don't go over that.
Right.
And then to see his heart kind of soften over the years, it's just like that captivated my curiosity. So I went to undergrad and pursued comparative world religions and was just interested in that and psychology. And then really, as I became a Christian and really wanted to have a role in that. And it really was like, I could imagine doing a lot of other things, but this is the most interesting to me. I was an illustrator for the first 2 years of undergrad. I still do some like charcoal portraits of people sometimes.
In a sauna,
yeah. The charcoal kind of melts a
little difficult.
That raises a question. Yeah. So as a minister in what church? What
Mercy Road Church in Burnsville.
And what denomination is it?
It's got a non-denominational feel. It's evangelical, but people are from a lot of different backgrounds. Yeah, Lutheran, Catholic, Baptist, obviously this story.
But that becomes your job. I'm approaching this from like the standpoint of a complete idiot on this.
Because I think we're gonna be good here.
I was looking at you like you're gonna say something so much smarter than that. I'm sorry.
He's prefacing with like, I'm gonna try something smart. It might not come out that way.
It's pretty much straight up idiot.
Proceed.
You know, when people go out and they get the job as like an illustrator or something.
Right.
So you went to college, you got this job. But when you go to college for like theology or something. Right. Like your job becomes theology. But I can, here's my point. I can imagine what the illustrator does during the day.
Right.
What I can't imagine is what the theologian does during day. Because are you sort of sitting there like, I'm going to hit the Bible again.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, like, I don't really know what that means as far as like your 9-to-5 job.
That's
type
a really good
stuff.
Question that probably, but I like when, right I, lived around. In, when yeah. I lived in Los Angeles, you'd run into people and they'd find out what you do. And it was something like in the Midwest, there's more churches and people who go to church. So it's not like, oh, I kind of get, you're a pastor. Okay.
Right.
But like in LA, downtown LA, they'd be like, whoa, like if you ran into like an astronaut, they've heard of it.
Oh my gosh.
They're like, whoa. Never met one, you know?
Astronaut is perfect.
I don't know. People did that.
I can't quite imagine what existed in books.
Yeah. I can't quite imagine what an astronaut does, except I do know that they're working, they're like sitting in the machine.
Yep.
And they're learning some math and shit.
Like my wife worked at the Guthrie for many years. So I'd go to the parties at the Guthrie and people would find that out. And actually there it was funny because they were equally mystified by the military officer and the... But anyways, to your question, before I answer that question, how did I enlist? I got accepted to Fuller Seminary in Pasadena, California. It just happened to be like the most expensive seminary.
Yeah.
The guy...
Oh, so they gouge people there too.
Yeah. Everywhere, yeah. But,
it's kind of the way it works.
The collegiate gouging happens even in the seminary world. Yeah, great.
But my buddy who I joined the military with, I kind of followed him to Fuller. He was pursuing his doctorate in psychology. They also have a really reputable school of psychology. And I was just there because of the weather, because that sounds way better.
No, it's true.
But his dad was... How old am I?
How old were you at the time?
21, right out of
and you,
I joined the military at 21 and I started seminary. But anyways, his dad, Tim, was a Marine pilot in the reserves. And he's like, you guys are going to go into so much debt. You're both debt free from undergrad.
Right.
So like, don't do that. And so he just kind of marched us down to the recruiter's office. And I was so
like a Marine dad does.
I was like way ignorant about it. Like the recruiter was in fatigues. And I was like, so you wear those like in the office, like with the boots?
Yeah.
And they're I think we got this one.
No, they did. Yeah. And like, they totally got me because I didn't even know I was kind of disrespecting them.
Right.
And so they're like, you know what? You guys qualify to become staff officers immediately, second lieutenants, direct commission in your program because you're accepted to seminary and stuff.
Right.
And the Army needs more chaplains than pastors need the Army. But are you guys like athletic? Because you could also go to basic training and be enlisted. You get free uniforms and wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
And we were just total suckers. We're like, he swam for St. Olaf. I swam for Wisconsin. We're like, we're college swimmers. We're athletic. We can probably do that.
Sure.
We like free uniforms. So we just, like idiots, just get sent to Fort Knox, Kentucky in 2004 in the summer.
Mercy.
And the same year that they declared the war in Iraq. It's just like crazy intense. Yep. Like everyone's like, you're all deploying and many of you will die. And
is there a moment when you kind of look over at yourself and your buddy, like you kind of inward thinking and you're like,
what just happened?
Wait a minute. Like that war that's us. Like
that's us
like,
now.
Like I thought. Free
well, I'm
food.
Kind of like a free spirit. Like, hey, we're going out for apps. Let's go get apps. Yeah, we're joining the Army. Let's do that.
Okay. Yeah.
He was sent to Fort Jackson, and I was at Fort Knox. And Fort Knox and Benning were the last two rotations of all male basic. Where and so the drill sergeants were like, still hit you,
just
and this will be
really into it.
And so I was just like, Ryan, I can't believe you got me to this, but. It made me a better chaplain to be enlisted for a little bit. And then I became an officer and went to officer school, which was way different. I didn't know much about it. My grandpa, who I never met, was in World War II. Yeah. My wife's grandpa, still alive in his 90s, was in World War II as well. But
do the combat veterans think that you chaplains are big sissies?
I would hope not.
Some of them do because...
goodness.
So. Yeah, what I love is he took that totally seriously.
Well,
obviously so did I.
No. Well, because they are not. We are non-combatants. So the Geneva Convention says...
I would hope not.
You can't carry a weapon, you know?
Right.
And some chaplains, to be honest, are big sissies. They're not in physically great shape.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I happen to be the youngest chaplain to put on the rank and the cross of the year that I commissioned in all the branches.
Right.
And so I was just really in shape and young.
Yep.
And so they put me in with infantry units and sent me to combat. Yeah. So that worked for me because I was kind of indistinguishable physically from other soldiers. Yeah. I was a lot younger.
And at that age, you probably wanted to be in and amongst the men.
So I would volunteer to go through different schools that like people didn't go to. I went to Norway in this exchange program where you train with the Norwegian infantry and jump in cold lakes and, you know, eat caribou heart and all sorts
of
stuff.
Started your love of sauna.
Right. You know, that sauna actually was part of it.
But also like hailing a little bit from your Montana ranch days growing up with your grandpa.
Yeah, totally.
That's not a big stretch.
But like, I remember a chaplain, his name was Chaplain Worley. This was when I was stationed in California. He was like really overweight, but he had a profile, like permission to be overweight.
Right.
And like for his PT test, physical training test, he would like ride a bike and he'd try to give candy out to the soldiers after the test and they're like about to hurl and just really didn't.
Yeah, nice.
So there are some chaplains that just don't get it. And they're like, well, I'm just a minister and I would love to help the troops and like they get them in. And like a lot of Roman Catholic chaplains are total studs because they need them so bad and they'll deploy over and over. And maybe if they don't have a family, they're maybe in some ways more brave to do that. But some of them are like 95 years old. They get like special permission because they need them.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, you're just looking at this guy and you're like, he's going to die of old age like in Iraq. You know?
Right.
While he's like, that's God's will.
Yeah.
So it's a big wide spectrum and it depends on the assignment. If you're with like a Ranger battalion, that's one life. If you're with a medical unit, that's a different with finance. And I got to get moved around a lot. And then when I finished 8 years in the military and started in a local church, I was already seminary trained and had preached and taught and done communion and last rites as people died in the battlefield and been shot at and like had these experiences. And then I just tried to figure out how to, okay, what do you do to your question?
Right.
What do you do as a pastor in a church? Because like,
a little different scenario.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a lot of it was like colleagues in, like I worked at a mega church and they're like, well, you can write your sermon for like 20 hours a day or maybe. And it's like, well, you weren't allowed to do that on the Iranian border. You're like doing services on the hood of a Humvee. Or,
what do you mean you can write your services for
sermon? Sermon.
Yeah.
So like you could put, basically you can craft this amazing, you know, 30-minute message, you know, and that can be like half of your job sometimes. But as an army chaplain, you're kind of, you know, the first time I really understood the ethos of that, I had a really good supervisor chaplain and he looked at my boots and I think I was in Kuwait or Iraq and he said like, why are your boots so clean?
Yeah. Go scuff those
Lieutenant.
Up.
And I was like, well, in basic, you're supposed to keep them clean. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was, sir, you know what he goes, if you're a good chaplain, you should have muddy boots. Cause that means you're with the men
with the
in
men.
The dirt, like up all night, like going on the Black
doing
Hawks.
What they're doing.
So, and I think there are a lot of pastors in local churches that are like that. And they, engage with people. I try to be like that, hence why I'm building stuff and do other things. But it's a little different. You know, I was in the hospital earlier this week. Little boy in second grade had potentially an amputation on his arm because he had a infection with meningitis and called compartmentalism.
Oh, yeah.
It just came out of nowhere, and the family's just devastated.
Right.
And so, like,
totally.
Sometimes you're walking into that, and you're laying hands and just praying on this little boy who's in, you know, on all these little wires and he hasn't been conscious for like since Thursday and you're praying for the family and you're giving them stuff.
Right.
And then you go and you do write your sermon. We've 600-700 people at the church. And so, you know, for the most part, I'm giving the sermon on Sunday.
So you don't do it off the cuff.
I try not to, although in Iraq
you didn't have a choice
and you do, you know, it's like oftentimes I would do little services on the Iranian border where there's like 15 people and they never get a chaplain. And I just fly in a Black Hawk and stop and do a service and give communion. And, that actually made me a really conversational speaker and not a scripted person.
Cause
you could, like, what are you going to write it down while like, it's flying away?
Right.
Well, and I think there's some,
where's everybody from? It doesn't translate. Yeah.
Like there had to have been a time when most of that stuff would have been off the cuff or, you know, like,
sure.
And I sort of like the fact that you have the ability to maybe do that a little bit.
Well, and I think that's why our church is pretty young. I mean, we're intergenerational for sure, but I think people under 50 in our world we've been advertised to so much that like, I think people really like, just who are you? Don't put on airs.
The salesmanship.
Did you like practice that in the mirror 10 times?
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted like, who are you really? Like, what do you want?
Yeah.
Do you have an agenda?
Yeah.
So that's why I like that you guys don't do the research because it forces you to do that.
I think it helps us.
Yeah. It totally does. Yeah.
But I mean, to your point, that we've been fed so much advertisement and we've been sold to and sold to and sold to, I think that makes us astute at seeing what's genuine.
Yeah.
when it can, yeah, for sure.
Because it's a sharp contrast to being sold to.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, but to answer your question, you know, you're preaching sermons, you're visiting people in the hospital. I have a staff that I have to manage, hire, and promote and manage, and hopefully not fire and all that. And I work with a board that I'm report to, like a nonprofit CEO yep. would. We're looking at partnering with a church in Lakeville that has a much larger facility and has a K-8 school attached to it and a senior center attached on the other side and a daycare mm-hmm. on a big 14-acre campus. And it looks like if we both congregations vote, we will move in. I'll be the lead pastor of a much larger mm-hmm. system. So lately, I spent a lot of time in meetings and meeting with lawyers. Yeah,
what does that look like?
Yeah, how do we do this and change the name and not have the actual bill of sale because we're merging, and what are the legalities and what staff and how do we merge that? So it's varied and it depends on church size as much as anything. Like a lot of people think like denominations are the most important distinction, and theologically they're, you know, Catholic is different than Baptist, but church size I think will probably determine what you do in a 9-to-5 more than anything if you're a pastor. Because if you're like a solo pastor in a country church, like where I spent my summers in Montana, it's a whole different deal. You're doing everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Everything every day.
I recently was, what's the word I'm looking for? Indoctrinated into the cult of UU. I'm teasing about the cult part. It's there's the Unitarian Universalists.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the acronym.
Which are like...
I was thinking...
About as kind...
Yeah, I know. I was like...
So was I.
Yeah. They're about as kind as you can get as far as like, we'll take you, don't worry. Yeah, exactly. They're like non-religious. Yeah. I really like that.
And I like that about being a chaplain because as a comparative world religion undergrad, I was very familiar with a lot of different faiths. And as a chaplain, you perform or provide based on your ecclesiological endorsement. But that means I'm like serving Muslims... getting them what they need for a prayer room or a prayer rug. Mm-hmm. And then like you become friends, genuine friends with other chaplains of really different faiths. I'm not a Unitarian Universalist at all, but like I had a buddy who was, and I'd always like joke and be like, it's time for your prayer to whom it may concern.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
You get it. You get it.
He's like, shut up.
No, I like your take on it though, because it reminds me of that community.
Totally.
And I say indoctrinated into the cult because they're so not cultish.
Yeah,
you know, like I showed up and they're like, I'm like, okay, if you guys try and sell me on some sort of weird religious crap, I'm out of here. And they're like, it's okay, you can be whoever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's like 25
we just
of them.
Maybe
in this
have
little
a hint
church.
Of that. Don't worry about it.
You're like, well, I don't know what to do with that now.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, so you mean it's just like a nice social club? Like, and you guys are, and loosely you try
make
and teach
some
me
suggestions about
teach
being
me about
good.
Things and make me a better person.
Intrinsically good.
And do good in the world. I think I can handle this.
Yeah. Well, and what's fun about the chaplaincy, especially when you deploy in combat, is you do form friends with people who you wouldn't be friends with. You know, like, honestly, if I bumped into whoever was leading your Universalist gathering there, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be like, oh, you're too judgmental, you're too narrow or whatever. Like, we have nothing to talk about. But if we're both in uniform in Iraq and we've both just loaded up a C-130 of like people who died in combat and just prayed over their body, like, you're brothers.
So
I love how it just transcends that. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are things larger and more important than the difference.
Like, I had a good Catholic chaplain friend, and he thought it was crazy that, like, in the service I led, we had, like, drums and guitar, and it was, like, a rock concert.
Right.
You know, and that's, like,
Catholics can't handle it.
Yeah, right. And you're like, what?
He's like, oh, how's your irreverence going there? And everybody's like, but we could joke about it.
Right.
Yeah. It's all good.
As it should be, because, you know, what I've come to, we don't do a lot of religion stuff, but what I've come to understand is that
there's not one that's right.
It seems like they all kind of want the same thing.
Right.
Just be good to each other. And like, you know, if you can focus in on that part of it,
there's a lot of overlap for sure. And that's where my curiosity took me. I do think the claim that they're all exactly the same is in and of itself a truth claim that's rather exclusive.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful of kind of that reverse, like, we're so tolerant, we're intolerant of everyone else who isn't as tolerant as us. But
I would never say they're all the same. I mean,
you're not. But I'm just saying, like,
but it's,
some people will hear.
Some people do that.
Some people even will hear how you said that and be like, yep, yeah, all roads lead to the same. It's perfectly the same. It's like,
it's pretty
different. Like, the five pillars of Islam are radically different than like what Lutherans believe and different things. But there is that ecumenical faith So anyways, I loved that about the Army because it brought us together, and it was less about what divides us. One of the unique things about my story in the Army is most chaplains don't see a lot of combat, but because I was young and with infantry units, I just saw, like, I don't know that I've met any other chaplains who've seen more than me.
Right.
So I was in a rocket attack and with two guys who died, like, in my arms, and was with them and got to pray with them and talk to them as they expired. One was killed on impact in that attack. And that same tour, a friend of mine who's a major shot himself, and I ended up finding his body. And as hard as, like, stuff like that is, it gave me a level of respect with the other chaplains where there was never this judgment of, like, you're not the right stripe of religion. Right, there was just, they'd like give me a big hug, and I was kind of like the, oh, you were that guy. And I'll still run into some people that know that story, and they're just like, wow, how did that go?
Shitty.
So kinda. That's a big part of the story, but it changes you for the better too. And I think it helps. I love the term post-traumatic growth. Because I think, you know, PTSD is real, you know.
Right.
I certainly have it. I always say to soldiers, you don't go into a coal mine without getting dust on you.
Right.
Just like, you know, if you're sexually abused as a kid, like, you don't just like shake that off.
Yeah, just like that,
will change you. But but in the same way, whether you've held friends who were missing limbs and died in front of you, or you were abused as a kid, or whatever your trauma was, you have a huge role to play, whether or not you want to kind of cooperate and graduate and use that towards making you more resilient and actually helping other people who experience something like that, or just kind of letting that define you and just kind of spiral into despair.
Right.
Know? And so
you've always said that, you know, I don't want people to be put in a, you know, a traumatic experience or deal with trauma or have to do that. But if you have, there is so much growth that can come out of it.
Totally.
I mean, there is a positive that can come out of it because you can learn and help and share other people that go through the same kind of things.
I mean, it's sort of been, it's been a part of my life philosophy or something. My internal philosophy is like, you can't really recognize how beautiful all of this is unless you see all of the things that aren't so beautiful too. Yeah. Like you could
an unfortunate appreciation of the good.
I mean,
you have to see some of the bad.
Sometimes you receive gifts you don't ask for.
Intolerable compliment.
Oh, look at all this. I should probably read more.
You can go back and Google what it all means.
I think we're done reading now. Everything's on.
Exactly.
No, but I mean, you know, the whole, like, you can't enjoy spring if you don't go through winter or whatever, all of these things that people say. But, like, no, it's intolerable. The grief part of it or the stress part of it is intolerable for some people, and then there's people like yourself that can be in there and understand, even as something terrible or tragic is happening, you're understanding, oh, this is just all part of, I don't know your exact thinking at the time, but this is all just part of life. Yeah. And someone's got to be here to do this. I would hope that's got to be part of it, because someone does need to be there.
Absolutely.
It's going to happen. Someone's got to be there and absorb some of it.
And I think that's why there is that respect for first responders. And, you know, you heard about the Burnsville officers.
I was going to bring that up because it's important.
The city that
it's in your community.
Mercer,
it's all of us. And it's
all of us. And
you're
so
close, but it's everybody's community. And that just was a terrible, terrible day for Minnesota.
And I think when that happens, people step back and they're like, oh, yeah, somebody has to talk to someone who's got mental health issues and they're being unreasonable, and there's children in the house and they have firearms. And thank God that someone is willing to do that and go to the training required to do that and then pay the price when you know, despite their best efforts, it doesn't work. So, yeah, the Army sent me to a school. That was a crazy school in Texas where you sit in class and look at, like, slideshows and videos of, like, blown up body parts and stuff. So you're desensitized to that. Mm. And they talk about trauma theory and, like, how to make it not about you in those moments. And, like, they kind of teach you how to not cry at key moments too, which is why, like, even to this day, so many years later, like, I'll watch like a Disney movie with my 7-year-old daughter or something, and I'll just like the waterworks come on. Because it's like,
you welled it all up.
It's like compensating for like the sequel. Like,
I wasn't ready for that. Okay, well, here we go.
And she's chatty. Are you okay? It's like, Moana's just really sad.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Why does it always have to be the mom? Why?
I hope Nemo finds his dad.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Disney is sad. Like, all the parents always die.
I was going to say, they're like the masters of achieving that.
Right. It's like, is there a story? Tears. Parents don't die.
Disney sucks. We can
I remember the first time my eldest jerks. Son. Oh, they are terrible about that. The first
I
time
love
my
Disney.
My eldest son told me, I disciplined him for something, and he was probably 4 or 5, and he's just with this sweet, innocent little face that I just love so much.
Sure.
He looks up at me and he's like, "I hate you, Dad." I was like, "Excuse me, did you just tell me you hate me?" And he was all mad. And then I got him to calm down a little bit. I'm like, "Where did you learn that, Tyson?" And he's like, "Well, Nemo says it to his dad."
Fuck you again, Disney. You bastards. You taught my kid to tell me
underlying
me.
Tones. I know they're there. You're teaching them to hate us.
We're all getting discipled by something.
Yeah. Damn them.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't even know exactly where to go. Do you do anything for fun?
Yeah.
I like to build the saunas. That is enjoyable. I like to fish.
I would even... you know, volunteer some time or
absolutely,
something. I really like the idea of this.
I'm not handy. I'm industrious. I've become handier because like I have people like Josh who teach me and they do that for a living. But one thing that I find therapeutic about building something or painting a wall or, you know, there's a start and there's an
end. I love that part
when you're
of
working
it.
With people, we're ongoing, we're messy. We relapse, we do all sorts.
Yep.
So like, you know,
you don't look at somebody and go, "You know what? We're good. I'm finished with you."
No, we're never finished. So it's good. But so there's always these open loops. Whereas if you do like a bathroom remodel or something, it's like, "Oh, look, that was ugly. And now it doesn't
now
suck."
Look at
you know,
it.
Like,
I was in construction for years and I always said if you could take the homeowners out of the equation, everything would be great.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's only because I was 30% of the time I was counseling a couple.
Yeah.
As they're spending money, they're trying to make big decisions.
Right.
They got other shit going on in their life. And then I'm there like, trying to just get your bathroom done.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And they're like,
just pick a color. That's really all I was saying. I wasn't trying to start a fight.
Yeah. And I happen to be a guy who likes to listen to people and kind of counsel people anyway. And they're like, "Can I tell you about this problem I have?" And I'm like, "Do you have to?"
Right. Yeah. I'm just working on the back.
Again, blue or green, but yes, I'll listen.
I'm grounding your tile right now, but I guess you got me trapped in your bathroom.
I literally am trapped in your shower.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Right.
It looks like you're going to tell me either way.
Yeah.
This is
you
happening.
Know what a change order is?
This is happening.
I'm tacking this up.
It's about
counseling.
To happen. Yeah.
A line item on the bill.
Yep.
Exactly.
Going back to the veterans and reaching out, that's one kind of practical thing you can do if you have a veteran in your life or a service member and you're concerned or you want to be. A lot of us, when you see some of the, when you go to war, it's difficult to come back and like go bowling, you know, because it's like you almost don't give yourself mental permission to have that kind of levity anymore, knowing that like your friends will never bowl and like your friends won't go fishing anymore. And so there's
I've read some books about this.
So like that's been a challenge. I really recommend to any veterans listening that they would find a therapist that works well for them. Not all therapists are the same.
Nope.
Just like not all podcasts are the same, you know, culture, personality fits. But
can I ask, I you're making a point and I want to let you make the point, but can I ask about the therapy thing? Because people say this and it has been time and time again proven to me that it is very difficult to actually find a therapist that will even accept, like they're so overburdened or something.
Yeah.
So how do you go about like, because it, that's something that it feels, you know, and I know you're not doing this, but it feels like the right thing to say.
Right.
Yeah.
But the,
but it can also be overwhelming
and
to someone who wants
terms,
to find a therapist.
How do they get to them? Like, how does that actually happen?
Yeah.
Well,
you know?
The VA gets a bad rap. I think the Minneapolis VA does a really good job by and large. You know, there are apps, there's been a little bit of an explosion of,
Like BetterHelp and things like that.
You know, I did some consulting for the Department of Defense for a few years on suicide ideation training and people with depression and stuff like that. Worked with a psychologist in Colorado, Matt Morgan, and that was helpful. It was called Salute to Relationships, an online training module. And so, you know, I would assume I haven't been doing that for a few years. That's even gotten more advanced. Right, so, but I think for a lot of people, it's not the actual lack of finding a qualified therapist. There's usually, in my experience, something else. At least for me personally, it was my own pride.
Yeah,
I liked to be the guy.
That's got to be a huge part.
To be in control. When you're an officer and everyone salutes you and calls you sir in your entire 20s, then you get out and you know they give you like medals and the Bronze Star and all that, and then you're like, now I just need to go talk to somebody, especially if you're in a helping profession. No, I'm the helper.
Right.
And so for me, it was a real humbling thing. I remember. Years ago, I was out at a Chinese restaurant with a buddy of mine who had done a lot of deployments. And just to be fair, like, Dex, if you're listening, you're crazier than I am. You know it.
Right.
And,
right,
but like, he told me, he's like, you are always helping and doing this stuff. I'm like, you got to talk to someone. And every time I bring this up, you have all your reasons. And he's like, I'm just going to say, like, we're done being friends until you go talk to somebody. And I was,
ooh, Dex.
I was like mad at him.
Right.
I was like, really? Like, that's how you're going to play that? Yeah. We went from the Chinese restaurant to someone and I just set something up and I was pissed, to be honest. I was just
feels
kind of manipulative.
I
didn't even finish my egg roll and now I'm over here. And again, it wasn't that I was even manifesting any like troubling things, you know?
No, but Dex saw something.
He saw
something and he saw a willingness. I lost a good friend of mine last year who I tried to have that type of a conversation with. I did. I told him, you know, you'll die if you keep doing what you're doing. And I know this. And it breaks my heart. And he just wasn't receptive. He didn't have it in him to be receptive to that.
Yeah.
So your friend saw something in you and was like, you know what? I'm gonna wedge that one little thing in there.
Yeah.
Well, because frankly, he wasn't gonna not be friends with you.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I also suspected he would not stop pestering me because that wasn't the first time he brought it up.
Right.
And
he knew it.
And I knew better, so I wouldn't hold yourself responsible for not being convinced, or anybody listening. But that was good because I did 12 sessions of cognitive behavioral therapy at the New FSCA.
Oh, that's actually helpful.
And the first counselor I met with, it was like nothing personal. We're not connecting. Right. I don't think this is gonna work.
Right.
And just to be completely candid, it was somebody who is on the progressive side, and I think just and I'm very middle of the road politics, like I'm not really a political person.
You just didn't align.
But no, I think it was kind of like when they found out I was a pastor, it was kind of like there was almost this vibe like, oh, so you're like a bigot or are you or whatever, you know, like is what I felt.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
that's exactly what we all thought.
Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You know, you came in and we're like, but God, fair, oh boy, this guy's going to be a dick.
But like, fair enough. Yeah. There are bigots who are religious too. You know, so
but, yeah, I know there are.
But that's hardly painting.
Right. Let's do our job here. Let's wait and not make this.
That could have been my own issue or perception. Yeah. I was probably looking for an excuse to like, what can go wrong? And the irony is the first day I went, I got a parking ticket because there was no parking in the Minneapolis VA. And so I saw a line of like pickup trucks and cars on the grass. And like military people, when we see a line, we get in the line.
Yeah, you're like, all right, so, let's do this.
And like, there's a ticket. And so the second session, I basically said, this isn't working with that. And then I got Ren, my counselor who really helped me, and he had me write down a very accurate account of what happened on July 16th, 2009 in that rocket attack and holding those guys. And it forced me, I've talked about it. I've always been able to be a comfortable speaker because of my profession. So I kind of confused my ability to talk about it with like, no, I've kind
actual
of processed
it.
But like writing all that out.
Hello.
And then he says like, what are your stuck points? And really having to read that to him, like multiple sessions until I got comfortable. Yeah. And he even would be like, it sounds like there's some confusion when you were like breathing for this guy with this breathing ball when the medic gave that to you. And I'm wondering like, if you need to call this lieutenant who is there and ask some questions. And it really helped me. And long story short, there was some like, stuck points in my story that I didn't even realize I was kind of holding myself responsible for some things that were really unfair to hold myself responsible.
Yeah. Right.
And like this lingering thing, like, could I have done more? And was this my fault that my friend shot himself? And like, even
in
the
rocket
attack.
You're putting it on yourself and it's not, that's not the
case. And so I felt so much more free after those sessions.
Yeah.
And I don't want to paint therapy as this, like, hey, if you go 12 times, like your whole life will be better.
Right.
But I feel like I'm a much healthier person. If you look at the metric that we're talking about with hobbies, I didn't like doing anything that wasn't like part of my job or business or being responsible or being a leader or a caregiver. Right. And now I feel like I'm a lot better, you know?
You can take a little time for yourself. You made that, you're like, I'm entitled to do something for myself.
Totally, yeah.
Which you didn't seem to feel that way before.
Right. Yeah. Whereas a lot of veterans, they don't have hobbies anymore.
Yeah.
They don't particularly like being around people. They won't do the work of unpacking some of the trauma. So they like play Call of Duty, drink Jack Daniels in their basement until they like die of liver cancer. That's not great.
Yeah.
You know?
It's almost like they've, because of what you've gone through, you don't feel like, okay, because there have been so many losses that there's a hard part to go, okay, you know, I'm entitled to do things for myself. I should be able to go bowling and do stuff like that. But that's a hard transition to make.
Totally.
And some of that, he told me to like go do a hobby, even if you don't want to do it. You know, some of it was exposure therapy, which was, I knew the theory because I was trained in that.
Right.
But it's different when you're in the hot seat and they're like, you're going to take your kids to the fireworks, even though you don't like the fireworks.
You're going
to
do it.
You're going to go bowling, even though you have your reasons why you don't like it.
And you're like, don't psychology me. I know that.
He was patient with me. He's like, okay, so you understand
you're going to fight
the theory, but like, I don't really need you to tell me that you know that. I just need you to go do that.
Yeah, right. Well, good for you. I'm glad you understand. Now let's see you
there's
do it.
There's a Minnesotan author. I'm pretty sure he's Minnesotan. I'm going to butcher this. I can't remember, but it's
don't worry. We don't have fact checkers.
I think it's The Things We Carried or They Carried. Do you know?
Yeah. Oh,
you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. The book? Yeah.
I was in the speech team in high school and my speech coach had me read that. And again, no military background in my family. Right. I was just like, wow, that's crazy. And I closed it and I was like, I'm not reading a section from that for my speech.
Yeah.
And then like in the irony of God's universe, I end up being in combat and like,
you're familiar with the book. Yeah, yeah. I read that a while back and just, I thought the approach of like not having an agenda, just here's what happened.
Right.
I'm not telling you how to think about it. I'm not telling you what the answer is. I'm not doing any of that. I was like, man, that's
Here's the facts. Good. Here's what happened.
And cognitive behavioral therapy, again, not a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Family and don't get your psychology advice from our show, people. If you're listening and you think you know,
there are professionals for a reason.
Yep, but take some of it. Like, go get help.
Go get that's help good. If you need it.
Totally. Yeah.
But of all of the things that sort of afflict us, you know, like. There's this little voice that you're always talking to in your head. And sometimes that voice is a dick to you. And sometimes it's, you know, your champion or whatever. And not everyone has it. I've learned. I didn't know that. But some people just don't have the little voice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if and I'm not saying you can't fix depression or these other things. But cognitive behavioral therapy for certain things is like you can get some real relief from certain things. It's one of the few things in the psychology world that is like clinically defined that you can change some patterns if you go do this one thing.
Yeah. No, that's like, well said.
Yeah.
I like with vets when I say that, a lot of them are just like, I don't even know what they're, you know, I don't want to do that. And I said, it's just coaching on how to think accurately about what you're thinking about and what you're telling yourself.
Yeah.
And so like they get very precise at the VA where you have to write out your stock points. It's like, well, since I don't have any hobbies anymore, I might as well just kind of be by myself because I don't want to bring people down. So they like write out something like that. And then they'll say like, how much do you believe that? And it's like, I don't know. And like, because they're mathematical, it's like, no, like 10% or 60%. Yeah. And so they force you to be like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I leave that like 60%. What three emotions come to mind when you read that statement that you say you believe 60%? Well, this, that, and this.
Yeah.
How much of that emotion do you feel? Like, well, I feel 35%.
Jesus.
And it's a little like weird.
Quit hounding me.
But by the end of it, you're like, well, actually, this is total bullshit. I don't believe it at all.
Yeah, holy shit. I want to go bowling.
Right. Yeah.
Which people's general perception of going to see the psychologist is lay on the couch and tell me what, you know, all the shit that happened to you as a kid or whatever. And that's the part where I think a lot of people would look at that and be like, that's not going to work for me.
But it does.
This is more of a prescribed method.
But cognitive behavioral does just, it's almost like a mental chiropractor where it's like, if you're out of alignment, it just puts you in alignment. And like, I really walked around for years saying like, I can't go to fireworks shows because it hurts too much or something like that. I don't even think I'd ever said that out loud. It's just like, but you know, now my kids are of the age. Now, why can't we have fireworks off the backyard? You know, oh, no, you can, but I'm going to be over. well, why can't you be with us at the cabin?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to be fishing like 150 yards away from,
right.
Why doesn't dad ever want to be? So then I was
because
forced
he's got
to
fishing to
right.
Do.
And so like, so Ren was, forced me to write that absurd statement about fireworks, I can't be around fireworks because I don't like it or something or whatever it was. And then it's like, how much do you believe that? How true?
80%.
Yeah. And then it's like, and then he's like, you're familiar with exposure therapy. I'm like, So then now like, I think it was the second year in a row where I bought the fireworks and I brought it home and the kids are like, sweet, let's blow stuff up.
Dad, you're the best.
You're awesome. And
yeah.
Doesn't mean it's always perfect. Sometimes you'll get like a flashback of like, whoa, that was a body part I just saw of a friend. But, it also reminds you like, this isn't going to kill you. You can do hard things. We tell it to our kids, you can move past it. And the more you expose yourself voluntarily, which is a key tenet of cognitive behavioral therapy, as opposed to being dragged and forced into that, then it loses its efficacy.
For sure.
Hey, one thing I do want to share with you because your story tellers and story hearers that you may find interesting. And it reminded me of your last question because you said, what do you do for hobbies?
Yeah.
And I said I was really bad at it for a long time and I'm getting better. In the really bad at it for a long time, I kind of came up with one because it seemed to me like work or ministry. Right. But it was really something that you guys would relate to because it was pulling stories out of people. I did a ton of funerals, something like 100 funerals before I turned 30, which is weird.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
And I did a death notification assignment for I don't know if it was a full year, it was a long time, where I'd knock on doors and tell people their son or daughter not coming home. So, you're living in that and you're living in the funeral and you're doing the funeral and you're seeing some people are terrible at eulogies and some ministers are terrible at running funerals. And I was young and figuring it out. And I remember this moment where I was just like, I wish the person who died could speak at the funeral.
Yeah.
And that birthed a hobby. And it was a nonprofit that ran for 6 or 7 years. The website's down now. But we had a Android app and a app for, iPhone, and we used to do video crews and I spent a lot of time doing it, but it was called Morning Story. The story you tell your mourners, MOURNING. And it would basically consist of interviewing people who are dying of cancer in hospice or people who are just really proactive and like have their life insurance.
I think I got this.
And it was just that idea that like, what would you say if you could speak at your own funeral? And it was a really fun hobby for me. Yeah. As odd as it sounds.
Interesting though.
Because like, you cut the crap when it's I'm speaking to like my loved ones. And we would write out little templates. My friend Frank Boyce and I founded this together. He's an Air Force Academy grad and veteran. And we were in Iraq at different times. And we kind of bonded over the creation of this. And but that was really fun because, you'd have the privilege of sitting with people who had kind of precious little time left. And then it's like, how do I help you craft? Because I was never on film, so it was editing heavy, which is part of the reason I don't do it anymore, where I'd ask questions and then you're like, okay, we're going to cut Mike out of there. But when it went well, it was crazy to see at a funeral.
I'm going
to
introduce you to someone who will
people would just
appreciate
go,
this.
Like, Joy's up there and like, we're here to see her. And then she, especially like the extroverts who could crack a joke to start it. Like, we had to do closed caps because when something was funny normally and the dead person who loves says something funny, it's like 10 times louder.
Yes.
Anyways, morning story was a kick.
Nice.
Wow.
I love it. I'm going to introduce you to Val Amston, who she'll just really appreciate it. She's she's starting a show. Her brother died suddenly at 42 years old and left. And she's doing a show that's kind of lighthearted-ish about how do you deal with this stuff? Like how do you
oddly enough we're normally not trained to deal with
and there's like all these things you don't think about, like what do you do with their social media accounts, how do you so there's the immediate emotional aftermath plus the and you've been through this
right
now.
Yes.
No, I anticipate. I was like, I'm not going to research them because they told me not to, but I bet one or more of them has experienced a fair amount of loss because you're not interested in legacy in a tenacious way if you haven't.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, wow.
Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
This was really, really
wonderful.
Yeah.
Just wonderful. Mike.
I had hopes, not hopes, but I mean, like maybe we finally found our bad guest.
No.
You know?
No. Not today.
It didn't happen.
No.
And I think we're all okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I shouldn't throw that out into the world. That's a joke world. Yes. I don't really want the bad
tempting
guest.
Tempting fate.
You do it long enough, you know?
No, but see, that's the problem. That's what I said. I was like, God, you know, at some point, we're like,
play the numbers.
But the best part is, that's exactly what I said. The best part is, like, what do we do? No one's going to know because we're not going to air it. So it never happened.
Maybe we have them all the time. This wasn't one of them. So no, thanks awesome. A lot for coming in.
Yeah, it's been a blast. Thanks for sharing
your stories.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Just really,
I am.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, my privilege. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you did it. You made it to the end of another show. Thank you all so much for listening to our show. We really, really appreciate it. Don't forget to send us your questions, comments, or even your guest requests. Maybe you want to be a guest. Maybe you know someone who would be a great guest. Send them in to info@legacymatterspodcast.com. All right. See you next time. Theme music and all the other music that you've heard on this show is created by and recorded by the fabulous Captain Al. Check him out.